I hope. This is some oldie Alan Parsons Project music.
Good afternoon, this is Lori Hoyt, and we're about to start our WILP radio show, and after listening to some good music, Dick always brings us good music. And as I said, our guest today is Lori Clark, and she is with the Blue Ribbon Mentoring Program at the high school. She's a high school specialist in that program, and we also should mention that she's a pretty enterprising woman. She started her own foundation a couple of years ago called the Hannah Ruth Foundation, named after two of her grandmothers for whom she had great respect and love. And this is to honor their name and keep their legacy alive in the community. Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
We're delighted. And we are here to talk about, I think it's in all the news still, it's an ongoing, unfolding tragedy. A young man, Trayvon Martin, 17-year-old African-American male, was fatally shot when he was returning to a gated community in Sanford, Florida, after buying some candy at a convenience store. He did not have a weapon. The shooter was a neighborhood watch captain, George Zimmerman, and he has not been charged as far as we know at this point. So Lori works with students, including African-American students and students who need a little extra support. And I thought she would be a good person to have here to talk about the impact of this with kids that she's working with, maybe her own son, and the community in general.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. I have the pleasure of working with high school students, and I'm also a single mom of two African-American males aged 20 and 21. And so I know my heart goes out to the family, of course, for this tragic loss. So I know, having raised two African-American males in America, particularly in the South, you know, the implications of all of that. And so, it's very difficult. Minority men, Latinos and African-Americans are stereotyped and watched and scrutinized. And so You know, if they do any little thing, people tend to bring to embellish that.
Yes.
And over the years, when I was raising my own sons, you know, I had to be very careful about training them to live in the society. I would tell them, whenever you go into a store, make sure you always get a receipt. Never leave without it, because if you step out, you know, someone could say that you're carrying stolen items, when you know, in fact, that, you know, you've paid for them, but you don't have the proof to confirm that. And then always be careful, even now, driving while Black. You know, never speed, always be respectful. So, you know, we're always training our minority males to go above and beyond to be respectful in situations like that, because you never know how people will react.
Yes.
Or if they have some anger issues, you know. And so you just have to train them to do that. And so, you know, again, my heart goes out to the Martin family, because we know that this kid did not have any weapons on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a senseless murder is what it is.
Yeah. Well, it was such a shock, because his father lived in that community, right?
He was
visiting his father. And while you don't want to too hurriedly pass judgment on anybody, but this fellow, the shooter, self-confessed shooter, Zimmerman, seemed like, at least in the reports we've heard so far, an overly zealous neighborhood watch person. At least one of the reports I heard said in the last 2 years he'd made 50-some-odd calls to the police department about this suspicious character or that one. And the tape that I heard where he said that this was a suspicious young man, and he was following him, and the police said, "Do not follow him, we're on our way." And yet he continued to. That just was really, really shocking. You know, it's almost like he was out to, I don't know, prove how needed he was in the community, or, you know, almost like the avenging hero. But and then one of the tapes, I think he was on the phone to the young man with his girlfriend,
right?
And this tape where they say they can't be sure it was him, but surely there are voice active. You can trace voices, and it certainly sounded like a very young voice pleading for help, and that was heartbreaking. That was heartbreaking. But I so appreciate that you're here, because I think a lot of people don't realize the extra training and precautions that African American, and I think also Hispanic, parents have to instill in their children, that with white privilege, we don't even realize that a lot of times. And this is certainly bringing that home. But here was a young man who, as far as we know now, was just walking along, not even speeding or doing anything except being, as far as we know, African American, and I think wearing a hooded shirt.
Right. We've had a lot of conversation about it, you know, that this modern day slaying is very comparable to, of course, Emmett Till, you know.
Yeah.
And, of course, too, if in fact Zimmerman had been a person of color, that he would have been arrested and, you know, locked up, you know, immediately.
He would.
So there is.
And if it had been a white kid.
Right. Absolutely.
And he was African.
So there's a lot of injustice here. And
I hadn't even thought of that. Wow.
Well, I also want to observe that in another respect, it's different than Emmett Till, because there was, with Trayvon, he was there, and that was it. There was no accusation that he whistled at the white woman or anything like that. It was simply, literally, a status offense. And so, I'm having trouble dealing with it.
I think we all are.
Other than the fact, too, you know, Dick, they're saying that Zimmerman shot him in self-defense.
Right.
You know, but, you know, when there's no weapon, what is the defense?
Right.
Right. That's another difference, that we know who the person is who shot. He said, "I did it." And so there are differences, but still it evokes the outrage and sadness and horror of what happened to Emmett Till, mm-hmm. you know, the injustice of it. But so you movingly have talked about how you had to instill in your children. And what about with the kids you work with? You have these two sons. How are they reacting to this? And how are some of the young people you're working with? How are they reacting to this?
Well, everyone's pretty much in shock.
Yeah.
You know, more so that Zimmerman has not been apprehended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of black-on-black crime and a lot of crime in general. So, but people are incensed that justice has not been served,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, he just made some very racial implications about there's a kid in a hoodie, anybody can wear a hoodie, you know, he has something in his hand, so if he has something in his hand, it must be something dangerous, a weapon of mm-hmm. some sort,
mm-hmm.
you know. And
not candy from the store.
Not Skittles, not tea, you know, mm-hmm. no, not his cell phone.
Yeah.
You know, but something dangerous, or that he's trying to harm someone. You know, he's in the neighborhood up to no good.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's really sad to me, you know, because there are so many injustices in our neighborhood. You know, people stereotype,
mm-hmm.
and they make assumptions about people based on how they look.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could only move beyond that and get to know people for who they really are, mm-hmm. Instead of saying, "Oh, wow, he's a thug because his pants are sagging,"
yeah.
or "he has a hood," or "he has locks," instead of saying, "This could be a very intelligent, a responsible father for all that we know."
Yeah. And what's amazing to me, at least in my experience, is that African-American males, because I won't say an old lady, but an older woman, and I have found them particularly gracious in opening doors and being helpful to me. It just has struck me, and always I'll think, gosh, you know, I wish people could see this. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think that they're brought up to have great respect for their mothers and, mm-hmm. and grandmothers. And I have had really such positive, sometimes unusually positive, mm-hmm. in terms of being very helpful to me. So it makes me doubly sad, because mm-hmm. it's so unwarranted and so much is based on fear. And as you said,
absolutely.
Stereotypes. But if I, you know, as a woman, if I see three males or four males of any color and I'm alone on the street, I'm going to have a prickle of apprehension.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's white males, as a woman, if I'm alone on the street and I've been, you know, downtown at night sometimes, not for a while, but
mm-hmm.
and they're approaching you, you're alone. I think any woman we get, and that's not racial, that is
mm-hmm.
a woman that we're on guard. But to make that a racial fear it's time that we move beyond this. And I guess my hope, having you here and there's a lot on the radio, I listen to the radio
mm-hmm.
more than TV, my hope is that this is going to start a national conversation about what risk young males, particularly ethnic males, whether it's, you said, African-American or Hispanic, I would imagine Indian.
Absolutely.
Any ethnic,
right.
a little bit darker skinned male.
Right. And I think the students that I work with, they're looking to see, you know, what will happen. How long will it take? You know, looking at all of those things. Because, you know, our justice system is not designed to really serve justice. Okay, so I don't need to elaborate on that. I think you know what I mean. And so this is going to send a very strong message about really the fate of African-American youth, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so they're just waiting to see. Now, what's interesting and what I am pleased with is the amount of nonviolent protests that's beginning to take place, the rallies, you know, that people are speaking out saying that they want justice. You know, so I hope that that sends a different message. But who do we have to really just force to say that this is what we're demanding, that this person be apprehended? And, you know, when you guys increase whatever your level of investigation is so that justice is brought to light. We're talking, this young man was murdered in February. We're almost going into April. And, you know, in the real scheme of things, if, in fact, like you said, he had been Caucasian, or if Zimmerman had been African-American or Hispanic, you know, things would be totally different. We would be talking a totally different story.
We definitely would. Well, that is the heartening thing, that people around the country have expressed outrage and upset. And I heard there was one protest rally in New York where, at least what I heard, that all the young people were going to wear hoods, you know, to say, this is not a symbol of being a bad person, you know, and just to have the courage to get out there, all of them with hoods, or at least many of them, to say, you know, it's okay to have a hood. I mean, I have a hood, I'm sure am I. You know,
right.
Many of us do.
Right.
It's a fashion thing, and it's just incredible to me that in this particular year, we hope we're moving forward, and sometimes it feels like one step forward, it's two steps back, and an incident like this, a tragedy,
absolutely,
really, it's discouraging.
Hoods are also a practical statement.
Yeah.
Keep my hair dry.
They keep your hair warm, your head warm, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Have there been any protest rallies here in North Carolina?
I'm not sure about North Carolina, but I know that we're beginning to do something on the local front. And I know at the high school, in memory of Trayvon, that they're going to do a hoodie day on Friday. They're asking everyone to wear hoodies.
Oh.
And so there's another wave of protests, and that is, and it came from a student at Carborough High School, that because he was carrying Skittles, that for anyone who purchases Skittles, that we're going to have a central location where you can come and bring empty Skittle packets. And hopefully we can get thousands of people to do it, or end up with thousands empty packets of Skittles. And then our plan is to send them to the sheriff's department in Sanford, Florida.
Wow.
So we want to bombard them with empty Skittle packages. And so we talked a little bit about this, and a couple of the principals are on board. And next week is spring break, so we're going to go full force the week after spring break and have everybody bring in their empty Skittles, and then we're going to send mass packages of Skittles to the Sanford Police Department.
Oh, that's a creative protest. I just lost my thought. Well,
I wanted to pick up something that we unfortunately have for the most part missed, because it was starting today at 11:20. I got an email from our sister Miriam Thompson that there was a vigil march with hoodies at 11:20 a.m. Today, which, as I say, we unfortunately missed it. There was a rally in the pit at 12 noon, and will consist of speakers on the Trayvon Martin case, as well as on racial profiling in general. Spoken word artists will deliver poems. Laptops will be available for people to sign the online petition, along with materials to write letters to the Sanford Police Department and local and state Florida government officials. And there's an incredibly difficult to deal with URL right here. I don't know what to do with that. Anyway, then the next thing, information available for participants to make phone calls to the police department. Photographers will be on standby to take pictures. If you want to take the Hoodie Skittles iced tea picture for your Twitter or your Facebook profile. If you cannot attend the march rally, feel free to watch the rally by the pit cam, which is www.unc.edu/webcams/pitcam. And that's the easy one.
But so there was this, that's really encouraging that they had that on campus, and I'm sure there'll be more.
Absolutely.
And I thought about what I was almost forgetting there. You know, when the police chief, I think it was the sheriff, mm-hmm. the police chief stepped down, he said temporarily stepping down, I thought then whoever took his place was immediately going to call Zimmerman at least in for questioning and start the ball rolling. But I have not heard any of that, and I had heard maybe a week or more ago a report, and I don't know if that's true or not, it was usually on NPR, that he was seen to pack up his things and get in his car and drive away.
I have heard that he is not in the local Sanford, Florida mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. And I cannot confirm this. However, I do believe that the interim Sanford police chief is African American. Yes. So you know that that's strategic. Right. In what they did in making him the interim yeah. in trying to diffuse, I think, some of what's going yeah. on,
right.
you know.
I think so.
Now, isn't that interesting?
That was exactly the impression I got when I first saw him. He got up and made his statement about something or other.
But I guess if he's not in the area, it might be hard for him to bring him in, but they could put out an all-points bulletin.
Well, I'm sure that they could... They probably know where he is, or they should at least know where he is, but I believe they removed him from the area for his safety. But, you know, I think that he probably should fear for his life, because there are a lot of people that are angry that justice is not being served.
Yeah.
And there are some people that believe that if justice is not served, some people don't have anything to lose. They take the law into their own hands. I mean, you know, unfortunately, people do that.
Well, but let's hope that this guy, realizing that he may be at risk, because when people are upset, they do things they might
absolutely
not do.
Right.
That he turns himself in, he'd be better off in police custody. And I think everybody, you know, let's have a thorough investigation. The facts that we've been given, if it does point to him, the investigation, if it proves that there's something that we don't understand, then so be it.
Right.
But for goodness sake, let's get on with it and not have these lingering upset and anger and fear, and that you know that this country still can't do what's right.
Right. And it's almost, when you listen to the tapes, it's almost like he really, you know, shot this kid in cold blood, because the dispatcher says, you know, walk away, drive away, you know, don't follow him.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear that, you think there's some rage or something in this person
yeah.
that's going to do that, you know,
right.
that a law, well, it wasn't a law official, but it was, well, it was 911 who the dispatcher that told him. And so, you know, if you don't adhere to that, what authorities are telling you to do, and you take the law into your own hand.
That's vigilante, and just on that basis alone, yeah. that he disregarded and walked into what could be a tense situation, because here he is, he's not a policeman.
Right.
So this kid's walking along, and all of a sudden, this guy comes out of nowhere and confronts him, you know, he probably was scared to death and he may have gotten angry. Who knows?
Right, absolutely.
Because he, as far as he knows, he's being accosted by some kind of a maniac, it could be, you know.
Right.
So the whole situation is really fraught with danger for both.
Yeah. You can thank the NRA and Alec for the Stand Your Ground law that the kid that Zimmerman is using for his defense.
I forgot about that law. That's right. But Stand Your Ground is if you're being somebody's accosting you. But he was going after that boy as far as we know.
Right.
There was no eyewitness to say that.
That's
one way
right.
or the other.
That's right.
And he can claim whatever he wants to. And that's what they call an affirmative defense, which means that he doesn't have to prove anything. You have to disprove it. You have to disprove his claim.
Mm-hmm.
It says here in my scribbled notes mm-hmm. from the law school I didn't attend, so I disavow any legal authority.
Yeah.
But that's what I've heard, is that... if I recall right, that's the case.
Well, if anything good, and I pray that something good comes out of this terrible tragedy, that it maybe this law gets reexamined and rewritten or off the books, because it is almost making it open season. Because you're right,
right. Absolutely. You mean, to almost? Bear, you mean the right to bear arms, or
there's,
what you?
There's no almost to it. You said it's almost open season. No,
it will. Yeah, well. For people who have, you know, you want to think that there are some people but you're right. You're right. I'm just thinking of the law intent was for people to feel that they could protect themselves if they were being attacked. But when you go after somebody, there's no way he can say he was attacked unless he put himself and threatened the boy, and then it might have been a scuffle between the two of them. Because as far as that boy knows, who the heck is this guy?
Exactly.
It's not an officer of the law. It's some white guy who looks pretty angry who's after me.
Right. And we don't know what the exchange was prior to.
Right.
You know, unless that was recorded on his girlfriend's phone.
And if he approaches him, stop, you know, and pulls out his gun, then anybody would start to defend themselves.
And just think, you know, you're walking home minding your own business. And then someone is harassing you.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is very scary.
Right. You haven't done anything. You're not running from anything or anyone.
He was walking down.
Just walking home.
So the whole thing just really, the more we talk about it, it just reeks of just such hatefulness and such fearfulness and such. I don't know whether it's like, you know, this guy sounds like, from what we hear, with this wanting to be the neighborhood watch guy and calling all the time, that he, you don't want to say he was looking for trouble, but in a way he was.
And it sends a strong message to minority men, to me, that they are not valued.
Mm.
You know, they're endangered species almost with you know, things like this happening, justice not being served, the issues around driving while black. You know, it's really sad. And so this, I believe, is an opportunity for us to have conversations, to build community.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see what we could do at the local level to begin to have conversations with young minority men about how they feel. And to do some nonviolent protesting of our own. I'm really glad to see that there was some organized protests today through UNC, but I wish there was some type of forum that this could have been web blasted or, you know, broadcast widely so more people could have participated.
Well, I am have sifted through here, and I have found a petition that people can go online and sign, and it's at www.change.org/petitions That's PETITIONS/ prosecute the killer of our son, 17-year-old Trayvon Martin, so on and so forth. That's just one big long thing, and if you get the one that says prosecute the killer of our son, that's the one you want.
Maybe we could give that to Lori to bring to school.
Absolutely.
Let the young people know that it's on this.
Right.
We've been talking with the Women's International League about having a vigil, but wondering if that was the most effective thing, and that's why we're really glad that you're here, and maybe with the NAACP, I think, mm-hmm. rather than just some of us women out there, we traditionally do it, you know, on a mm-hmm. Wednesday at noontime, but really want to talk about what would be the most effective way we could have a local protest. And I like what you said about a forum. So maybe we could have further conversations with you and some of the young people, and also maybe with the NAACP, who I'm sure would want to work on that. You know, we could think about whether just to have a rally downtown and mm-hmm. a march, but want to do it then instead of our traditional Wednesday when the young people could participate.
I mean, and think about this, you know, and just thinking about the justice system, you know, we're not that far removed from our own issues. You know, just recently with a young man that was walking home that was stopped on Rosemary Street, you know, the issues with our own police department.
Yes.
So, I mean, in light of this tragedy, this is the opportunity to begin to take a look at some of the local issues we're having.
Yes.
And again, to begin to have conversations about what we can do to build relationships and be more of a community.
Absolutely. Right. This issue of young African American and other ethnic young people being stopped and questioned happens much too frequently. You know, we hear about it at our NAACP meetings.
Mm-hmm.
We hear, you know, and most of the time it goes okay, but they're stopped by official police at least,
mm-hmm.
and not by some stranger taking it upon himself to do, which would be, to me, like illegal questioning,
you're
minding your own business, you know. So that, but this does happen, and it happens recently, not that it happens often, and that's something that I think that would be the best, one of the best things that could come out of it would be us really. And it may be to have a protest, but then maybe to have a discussion
mm-hmm.
with the young people and the police.
Because, you know, a lot of young people are distrustful
mm-hmm.
of our police department.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
No surprise, you know. If you're stopped when you're just walking down the street, which does happen.
Well, with that and, you know, with immigration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there are a lot of things, you know, mm-hmm. you don't have to look very far.
No.
To think about some of the injustice that's going on all around us,
and how these situations can erode
any
kind of sense of trust, or that there's justice in this community. I'm getting a signal from Dick that we are a little overdue for our station break, so we'll catch our breath here for a minute. And
yes, this is WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. Your 100-watt station that can be heard within 5 miles of the transmitter, which is not very far. Or you can log on to the station's website, which is wcomfm.org, and click on the Listen Now button, and you'll be connected to whatever show is on the air at the moment. And that you can do that anywhere you can get the Internet. So please do.
And we have an underwriter that we are proud to mention.
Yes, our underwriter is Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. And it's a wonderful community resource where people can have meetings. They have poetry readings, arts available. And, of course, being a bookstore, there will be books and magazines. And we encourage you to...
Bumper stickers.
Oh, yes, bumper stickers. Must not forget the bumper stickers.
Yep.
And we encourage you to go down there and pick up all kinds of different culture. The kinds we've mentioned, and also the fact that the books you're going to find down there and the magazines that you're going to find are going to be somewhat different.
And again, this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. It's our Wake Up and Connect the Dots Wednesday afternoon radio show. We're here every Wednesday afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock. And we appreciate all of our listeners. Before we go back to
I wanted to drop one thing in here.
Yes.
I mentioned about the petition that you can go online and sign to go to change.org about Trayvon and trying to... I'm pretty sure it's going to go to all the relevant places like the U.S. Justice Department and the Sanford Police Department, mm-hmm. and the whatever county it is, prosecutor in Sanford, mm-hmm. Florida. And the other thing we need to do is on a completely different subject, and that is there is a Senate bill which is being worked on right now.
North Carolina Senate or the National?
North Carolina Senate.
Okay.
To remove university staff from protection under the State Personnel Act. And this is a very important thing because it means that all of the people at the bottom of the ladder will have protection taken away, mm-hmm. That they have until now had. I don't know what the logic is behind it, but they may think it'll save some money, but it will certainly help keep people at the low end of the ladder.
And
they've
already done that with the hospital employees, and you're right. It gives them the ability to keep wages depressed. And in this current, even though the economic situation's improving a little bit, many people are still fearful, who have jobs, are fearful of losing them. And a lot of employers, probably including our great university, are taking advantage of that and squeezing more work out of workers who are already doing their utmost to keep their jobs. Right. So it's a very, very, it's scary in terms of labor and in terms of their ability to organize. And this is just another step of this state going backwards instead of forward.
And it's important not just because of the economic consequences, but also the fact that workers will not have any protections from rules that will prevent harassment,
all of the above,
right?
But before we go back to our guest in our discussion about Trayvon Martin's death, murder, and the tragedy of it. I just want us to, before we forget, to do a brief report about last night's fracking program at East Chapel Hill High School. Almost 500 people.
That's awesome.
Attended.
Well, the number I heard on the radio was 600 this morning.
I think that's all that could get in the building. There were people waiting outside as people left to get in. So yeah, the 600 would be that would make sense because it was packed inside, and 500 was the capacity inside. There were still many people outside who could not get in. And
big sign on the board said, "Sorry, fire marshal says stop."
Yeah,
that's encouraging when you have that many people come out.
Right.
And I would say a good, and this was confirmed on the radio, a good proportion of them, or most of them, were very much against fracking. And this meeting was one of I don't know quite how many public meetings that the state has had with what the DENA report, which is the Department of what Energy and Natural Resources,
Environment
and Natural Resources, and they. The report is 450 pages.
Wow.
The people who have perused and analyzed the report from all that I've heard from several sources, the report itself was really good about all the different problems that can arise with fracking in great detail. But then it's like a schizophrenic report. Then the conclusion is that North Carolina, if it gets into place and learns from other states, the right regulations,
and
that it's
properly regulated, right.
Properly regulated, that it could be safe. But then they also said in that meeting, Robin or whatever her name, I forget her last name, the head of that department said, there's so much we don't know, and the legislature forced them to get it out so quickly and didn't give them sufficient resources. And she said that. And that this is like the best they could do, because mm-hmm. there's some other reports that are going to be coming out from the EPA and things that would be important to have incorporated. So she said that this is like a draft. We had to get it to the legislature. They want it by the beginning of May. And so they were under tremendous pressure. So I think in one way the report was probably the best they could do with the political and economic pressure that they're under, but I may be being a little too kind, but I think that she almost stated that publicly, I felt.
Yeah.
And so the report itself really outlines the problems, and I think that the people there, and I think it probably in other venues where they've had public comment, people are very, very upset about it. And it's going, the main, one of, along with many other problems, one of the big fears is the contamination of our water.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just many, many issues. We've had a good program on it. We will be coming back to that. We may be having John Wagner, one of our Wilf brothers, who he with Lib Hutchby have been our point people on that subject and have spent hours informing themselves and going to so many meetings. And so we're going to have John on.
Yeah. It's something that came up last night after you had left. I ran into Sally Coast, who's a member of the board, county board in Chatham County. And she said that they have announced that they're going to have a third public meeting for comment, like last night's. They had one on the 20th, March mm-hmm. 20th, in Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
They had one last night in East Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have a third one, which is the last day for comments, April 2nd,
mm-hmm.
In Farrington, in I imagine in the big barn
in
Farrington Village.
Well, folks, you heard it here.
It will be at 6:30, and Sally was disappointed that she didn't get to post it
well,
on the board or announce it. But
we'll get that out on our email, and we're telling you now, because the April 2nd is the last time you can make public comment, and you can write your comments to the Department
right.
of, and what is it?
Either hard copy or email.
Email to the
DENR.
DENR, and you can Google that, you know, how to get it to them on email, WW, whatever. And so please, if the people are strong, it's going to be harder to turn against them, because this is a big one, and it's going to affect the lives of all of us and our children and our grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little plug for the locals. The
yes.
Grannies were a big hit.
The Raging Grannies sang, and people are so kind. They give us such wonderful applause and feedback, and it's so encouraging. So keep tuned. We're going to this is an ongoing subject, and we'll be talking about it again. So I do want to get back to our guest, Lori Clark, who is a specialist, a high school specialist for the Blue Ribbon Program, and has also got her own foundation, as young and beautiful as she is, the Hannah Ruth Foundation, for two grandmothers who have had a big impact on Lori's life, because Absolutely. Her life has been dedicated to young people, to activism, to trying to make this a really good community.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Lori, thank you so much for being here. So we have a little time left, and you've had a little break, and so we'll be wrapping up. Maybe is any other thoughts that you have that you'd like to share with our listeners, or some ways to maybe get in touch? I don't know if maybe you want to say a little bit of something while you're here, but some people may not know. We've had Greg Meyer on about the Blue Ribbon Program, and one of the women who's one of the volunteers whose own children were helped by the program. So we know how wonderful it is, but we don't know if all of our listeners have heard about it. I wonder.
Sure, I would be delighted to share. We, as a matter of fact, we have a lot of Trayvon Martins in our program because Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocate was designed for minority students in the school district to help close the achievement gap, which we continue to try and close.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a strength-based program, and so we don't look for the neediest students. Or students, you know, with a lot of academic struggles, but we look for students of promise that with some additional support from adults and motivation and encouragement, that those students can go on and really soar. Mm-hmm. And so students are able to apply or referred in the fourth grade, and they usually get a referral from the family specialist, their teacher. Sometimes parents or community people can identify and make the referral through their school's family specialist. And so then we match them up with volunteers in the community. Volunteers have to commit to at least 2 years,
mm-hmm.
Simply because we begin in the fourth grade, and then you have your EOGs in the fifth grade, and then that helps to transition them to middle school.
And for people who could tell us what an EOG is?
EOG is the end of grade tests.
Okay.
Which I'm hoping, you know, integrate tests. So anyway, you know, so you commit to 2 years, volunteers commit to 2 years, for a minimum of 2 hours a week, and it's, you know, you're not doing anything spectacular or out of the ordinary. It's what you simply do right now. So Dick does the radio show. There might be a kid that's really interested in broadcasting or music, and with, you know, we will look at their other interests and similarities.
Yeah.
And
so
that could be a good that could be a good fit for Dick.
Yeah. Or somebody like to cook.
Absolutely. Have, whatever his hobbies and interests are.
Actually, you like to cook, too. You're
yeah.
good cook.
So, and then Dick would serve as an advocate for him. You know, the mentor has access to the student's file and, of course, does not become the parent, but becomes an ally and a support to the parent to be able to navigate our very interesting school system.
Intricate.
Absolutely. I was about to say that, and I just ended up with interesting. And so then our students stay in the program through high school, and I have the pleasure of working with our students in high school to prepare them for college or a career.
Mm-hmm.
And many of our students are still first generation going to college. So mm-hmm. it's a lot of college tours, SAT prep, you know, working with them and their parents on the FAFSA.
And talk about the intricacies, you know, as a parent, I consider myself reasonably bright. It's really difficult. Really difficult.
It's extremely difficult.
It's almost like you need to take a course in how to help a kid figure out about going to college.
And if you don't get it just right, believe me, number one, that affects the amount of financial aid you get.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you're penalized for not getting it in on time. And then, of course, everything's done online. You know, so not everyone has access to the internet.
Some of us don't. Some of us don't. So I'm very sympathetic, and I just realize now for a parent, one thing, it's expensive. Everybody I know who has one, they're always saying, within a couple of years, it seemed like a short time, oh, I got to get another one. I mean, it's an expensive project.
It's very expensive.
Yeah. And you can go to the library, thank goodness, but they limit you because so many people don't have them, can't afford them, go to the libraries. And they have a list, so they limit your time. People who are so fortunate to have that in the home don't realize the struggle it is for a lot of people, a lot of parents who can't afford it.
Exactly.
Or haven't been trained in it. Mm-hmm. And everything's online these
Everything's
days.
Online. Yeah. And then for, you know, not a lot of our families, but some families have a situation where the grandmother might be raising grandkids. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, grandparents don't tend to really understand or want to get, you know, no disrespect against anyone that's the older generation.
Thank you that's disrespecting me.
But that's just a fact.
It is.
You know, again, we do have a lot of Trayvon Martins in our program, kids of promise and of hope that they want to do well. Mm-hmm. I don't know any kid that doesn't want to do well. I think sometimes we fail them in teaching them and giving them the resources that they need to be successful. We just had a big workshop on Saturday called the Greenhouse Project with our new superintendent, Dr. Forsella.
Then that's another hopeful thing for our school system.
Absolutely.
I've met with him a few times with the NAACP Education Committee, and I'm very impressed and very hopeful.
And so I was thinking about this today, about, you know, his new philosophy of mind growth set. So then the classroom doesn't remain a lecture hall, mm-hmm. but it's more engaging, and the teacher, if you will, becomes more of a facilitator.
A facilitator and so resource then, person.
Right, and so then everyone is engaged in learning and feels comfortable learning, and you share. And so then when you create that type of environment, mm-hmm. excuse me, I don't mind sharing my answer with you, even if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. because I want to share. But I'm looking forward to seeing the way that you've done it and you've done it. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, you've not done it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we think beyond, you know, what we're taught to think.
Instead of, you know, this canned answer.
Right.
It is to engage in the process of learning and getting to enjoy and feel good about the process of learning.
Right.
Because so much of what we learn changes.
Absolutely.
All the time anyhow.
But the thing that doesn't happen so often, the way the schools have been structured, and it's been going piecemeal for decades, and that is they very carefully guide you towards being able to answer multiple choice
Absolutely.
Questions
mm-hmm.
or maybe writing an essay, but maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't teach you how to think. They
right.
don't teach kids how to think. And that's
but we're hoping that that's changing.
Think.
That's true.
Right.
And I think Americans.
The problem is it won't change
particularly.
Unless we do something about it as citizens, because mm-hmm. it's to the advantage of the elites, the one percenters,
mm-hmm.
to keep it that way.
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right.
So that's my soapbox.
So the Blue Mentor Program is something you've been in that for a long time.
For over 10 years.
For over 10 years.
Yes.
Yeah, and you enjoy it.
Oh, it's my life's work.
And how wonderful to, if you like kids, and to be in a program like that. And we've got to give the school system some credit.
Absolutely.
For a program like this, which is pretty innovative, and supporting it. But how wonderful, if you like kids, to be in something that is so full of hope.
Absolutely.
And so full of people working together, parents and volunteers and you and the staff to help get give these kids the resources they need to achieve whatever they're capable of. That's wonderful. So we only have a minute left. We've been talking about the tragedy of Trayvon Martin and the impact for African-American kids, waiting to see will justice be done.
Right, and
you can't wait.
No, you can't wait. I just want to say that we have a million Trayvon Martins right here in the community, mm-hmm. amongst us. And so I'm happy to see that people are talking about it and really want to see justice served. And I'm really excited that the students that I work with, have come up with the Skittles campaign.
Let's not forget the Skittles.
And so I just want to, in closing, I want us to remember Trayvon's family.
Yes.
And just pray that justice be served. But think about what we can do at a local level, mm-hmm. To begin to have conversations and to take this movement, to let people know that all around the states that this movement is going on, mm-hmm. and that, you know, as our NAACP state presidents states, you know, we cannot stand still. You know, we have to move in the light of the movement. And so that's what we have to continue to do. And so whether it's Skittles, whether it's the pit, whether it's the vigil, we all need to come together to be able to do that,
or
so that we
can have a forum.
Right. So that we can move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And keep their family in our hearts and in our prayers, because they're struggling. The family is real involved in this struggle for justice.
Absolutely.
It's an ongoing struggle, and this is just another, it is a wake-up call.
Absolutely. When you see a minority male on the street, just think that could be Trayvon Martin.
Yes.
Yeah.
It could be.
And let's not sleep on this.
No, no.
Okay.
Keep agitating.
Yeah, well, thank you to our listeners. And just to let you know that we do, it'll be in a few weeks that you will. We have a website. Maybe it's, what is it, our website?
www.trianglewilpf.org.
And we have on there, you can access our previous radio shows, and this one will be on in a few weeks.
Right.
So that, and we'll be able to maybe get a copy for you.
That'd be awesome,
Lori.
Yeah,
Dick?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you again.
Thank you,
Lori.
So much for having me.
And we'll keep in touch, and we all will have to be thinking about how we can continue this conversation.
Absolutely.
With other people in the community.
Okay. We're going to take you out with some different music by Fred Ho and Quincy Saul. Little ditty, cotton ditty, who knows? The Cry of My People.
Ooh. To me when I can do it. Hot off the press, want to be sure to tell you that the Wilps, we have a Nation magazine book discussion group. It'll be Monday, April 2nd at 7 o'clock at Flyleaf. Thanks a lot.